Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. When it comes to good nutrition and the prevention of disease, berries are the new magic bullet, and Alberta could become a major producer of juices and functional foods based on extracts from black currants and Saskatoons. With some help from the Alberta Ingenuity Fund, researchers at Olds College will find the best varieties to produce these so-called dark berries. And fire ecologist Dr. Ed Johnson looks at some of the mysteries involved in predicting forest fires. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Over the last few years, a lot of attention has focused on the health benefits of eating blueberries and cranberries for the prevention of cancer and other diseases. The spotlight is now shifting to a group of fruits known as dark berries. These are black currants and Saskatoons. Surprising as it may seem, Alberta could become a major producer, processor, and exporter of dark berries. That's why berry producers in central Alberta have teamed up with Olds College and Alberta Ingenuity. Dr. Paul Kowajaychuk is the lead research scientist with the Olds College School of Innovation.
Okay, why black currants? First of all, this is a fruit which is good for moderate and cold climate, so we can grow it here in Alberta. It's grown extensively in Europe, in Central Europe, in Poland, also in Scotland, which climate is not very tropical, and also in New Zealand. So those are biggest producers of black currant. Now, black currant juice is extremely rich in antioxidants and in colorants. We call them anthocyanins. Those anthocyanins are also antioxidants, but also they play many other roles in human and animal organism. And some are important for our vision. Some are important for protecting against diabetes and some other disease. So we believe that black currant is a perfect plant to be grown in Alberta, because we can produce not only juice, we can produce products for nutraceuticals and functional food industry. And we can produce also from, say, skins, we can extract anthocyanins. And from seed, we can extract oil, which is GLA, gamma linolenic acid.
Well, it's not just black currants. We're here today at the DNA Gardens, and they're also growing Saskatoons. What is it that's similar between the two berries that gives them this sort of healthy aspect?
Well, both berries, they are so-called dark berries. So they have same kind of compounds, chemical substances, anthocyanins. However, this composition could be slightly different, and they have different antioxidants, different phenolics. Both black Saskatoon berries and black currant, they are excellent protectants against free radicals, against oxidation reaction. As you know, as we are getting old, all these free radicals, they are causing lots of damage in our DNA, in our other tissues, especially fat tissues. It's very important to take lots of antioxidants, and this trend is very strong lately.
Well, this is something that's really new for Alberta. Where does it fit into the bigger picture?
Well, saying bigger picture, we have our role as Olds College School of Innovation is to help local industry, especially small and medium-sized companies, to develop marketable products. And of course, those companies, they usually don't have enough scientific expertise. They don't have laboratories, they don't have instrumentation, which is quite expensive. It was a couple of years ago, we created Olds College Center for Innovation, which is supposed to be incubator for helping industry to develop exactly this kind of products. Now, we are thinking about value-added products from any things which is coming from agriculture. So it could be fruit, but it could be, of course, herbal materials, it could be medicinal plants. And we are working with several companies on this.
In this particular research project, you are collaborating with Alberta Ingenuity and also DNA Gardens. How does that work?
Well, how it works. Olds College Center for Innovation, which is called now Olds College School of Innovation, has been set with the money coming from private and public sources. Our biggest funder was Canadian Foundation for Innovation, but also we have provincial agencies like AVAC and Alberta Ingenuity, which help us quite a bit to develop this facility. We got support for our previous postdoc, which was with us for 2 years, working on medicinal plants and aromatic plants. And now we are really lucky in getting support from Alberta Ingenuity for this exciting project on anthocyanins coming from dark berries.
I find it interesting that you actually had to bring a researcher from Poland to do the work. Why Poland?
Well, why Poland? It was kind of coincident because we have been working with a group of people from Poland on some other antioxidants. And I learned that big center of research on blackberries is in Poland. Actually, it's Professor Ośmiański who is heading the center in Wrocław, Poland. And he is also head for European program of blackberries and utilization of blackberries products. Poland is the biggest producer in Europe of black currant. They are not growing Saskatoon berries, but they have some other plants like aronia and all juices you can even buy here in Alberta in specialty stores.
When you look at the fruit itself, it comes on in about a 2 or 3 week period and then it's over. How do you turn that into an industry?
Well, this is a partial problem, and I think this is a typical problem for agriculture. Apart from production, you need to have storage facility and you need to have processing facility. Time of harvest, I guess it's quite limited, as you mentioned. It's a couple of weeks. Time of harvest, this window when you collect your plants, you can extend it by a selection of right varieties, some early cultivars and late cultivars. This way you can spread your harvest time over maybe months or maybe even more than 1 month. But definitely you need to have processing facility, which is able to process a large amount of your fruits, plus storage facility. Mostly you freeze these berries and process during the year.
At the college, you're in the process right now of actually setting up a processing plant. What would be there?
Okay, what we start building our center by building laboratories, because whatever you do, any process you do, you need to have ability to test what you are doing. So you need to have analytical support for any of your activity. Right now we have very well equipped laboratories which are able to do lots of analysis and evaluation of the plant material. We have so-called microprocessing unit, where we can produce certain amount of material, say, in 50 kilogram range. But right now we are building our big pilot plant when we'll be able to produce tons of materials. So this pilot plant, it's on the stage of finishing, but it's not finished yet, but it's coming.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Paul Kowajczyk, lead research scientist at the Olds College School of Innovation and head of the New Products from Crops and Bioprocessing Program. Another partner in this Alberta Ingenuity Industrial Associateship project on dark berries is DNA Gardens. It's located southeast of Red Deer near Elnora. Owner Arden Dealadays and her husband Dave, and that's where the DNA in the company name comes from, have been fruit farming there for 30 years.
I guess my first heartthrob and passion were Saskatoons. The original patch is now 30 years old and been rejuvenated twice, once the very hard way. But to answer your question, I have 8 acres of choke cherries in the field, clonal varieties. And I do a lot of stooling bed material for our nursery, and predominantly Saskatoons.
How did you get into fruit trees?
Well, like I say, it was my original passion, right, coming from Olds College. I'm a graduate from there, and I know it sounds simple, but I sat in on a session that Dr. Len Pearson gave when I was a student, and I went home and planted my first acre of Saskatoons. And I mean, it's just intriguing to start to study the insects and the diseases. And then, of course, you're networking through berry schools and whatnot with researchers. And I mean, you just never quit learning. It's fascinating.
You're now involved with this research project in collaboration with Olds College and Alberta Ingenuity. What's this all about?
Well, I think this is really an exciting part. I'm actually involved with, there's 17 growers of black currants in the Red Deer area, and you might say we're joined at the hip. And I guess I started out originally with Saskatoons rather, and the black currants have come to the top. The cream comes to the top, they always say. You kind of believe your own sales pitch after a while. Like, the flavor of the black currant is just awesome. And then you start reading about the nutritional and nutraceutical components, and, you know, it's just top of the chart. And I went to visit Dr. Paul at Olds College, and one thing led to another thing. And, you know, our plans are to introduce health drinks to the market. And I think black currants are just a natural shoe-in.
What do you see as needing to be done with this research?
Well, I think that Dr. Paul and Anna certainly want to quantify the antioxidants in the berries, and I think they want to help us establish a protocol in processing where we are able to maintain those components that are so healthy.
Do you think that this is going to grow into much of an industry?
Oh, I think absolutely. It's got tremendous potential. You know, the old saying, Rome wasn't built in a day. I think you have to start somewhere and develop a product. But certainly with the science behind it, I think it just exponentially grows. I mean, you just need to get that message of the goodness and the health out to, for instance, media outlets like yourself and magazines and that sort of a thing. And I mean, never in history has there been a time when the consumer is more concerned about fighting aging. And you know, I always say, who among us isn't getting old and gouty? Like, a lot of these fruits, the cherries for instance, are high in melatonins, which help you sleep, and they are reported to have 10 times the anti-inflammatory properties of aspirins. And I mean that's absolutely huge, and that's research coming out of the University of Michigan and Texas as well. So it's all this material that your mother used to tell you about, eat your fruit and vegetables, it's just right on. But science is just now playing catch up and quantifying it.
Do we really have the climate and the soil conditions that would support this sort of a berry industry?
Oh, I think so. You know, agriculture is always challenging, that's for sure. And I mean, certainly we've planted orchards coming through two of the driest years on record. And, you know, we're all going to church praying that it's going to start to rain again. But our orchards look just awesome, considering that we've come through those driest years. Our cool nights help preserve a lot of the sugars and the components. So we are thinking that we have a natural advantage from a cultivation point of view in terms of insects and diseases. So yeah, we're excited about it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That was Arden Dilladays of DNA Gardens near Elnora in central Alberta. The scientist who will do most of the research on the components and qualities of the black currants and Saskatoons is Dr. Anya Bukowska-Barchuk. Having arrived in Alberta only a few weeks ago, she's come a long way from her lab in Poland to do some berry picking in Elnora. I caught up with Anya in the fifth row of some very loaded Saskatoon bushes at DNA Gardens.
Because we don't have the Saskatoon berry in Poland, even in Europe, so it's really interesting to find some new stuff, new compounds in Saskatoon berry, and find how much polyphenols they contain and what we can do with this.
The work that you were doing in Poland, the research there, what were you working on?
My work in Poland was focused on the anthocyanins, that means the fruit and vegetable colors. We can find the natural colors in a lot of kind of different kind of fruits. And this is natural stable color which we can use in the food industry during the processing of the food. So now I'm looking for the colors in berries, different kind of berries, and I'm looking for a polyphenols in Saskatoon berries in black currants, because polyphenols have a really high of antioxidant activity, high level of this activity, and this is really healthy. I was looking for flavonoids, and I found some roots, Chinese herbal roots. They possess about 20% of flavonoids in this root, so it was really a great stabilizer for my polyphenols. Maybe I can find something here. So it's growing wild in the prairie, and we can use it in the food industry.
Well, why is it the color that's so important?
Colors is important because the customers, when they choosing between the food, they're looking for food which possess a nice, healthy color. And now, because everybody are focused on the natural products, scientists looking for stable natural colors. So I'm focused on different kind of sources to which I can find a stable color, natural stable color on this.
Now, in this patch on DNA Gardens land, there's, I believe, 17 different varieties of Saskatoon berries, or Saskatchewan berries, as you've been calling them. What would be the difference between these different varieties?
I hope that will be, you know, a big difference in the amount of polyphenols, especially anthocyanins, so we can find the best variety for the food industry, so we can obtain the juices or different kind of products with really high amount of polyphenols. So we can call this product functional food, so they possess a high antioxidant level.
So today you're picking some of the berries, then what do you do with them? You take them back to the lab and then what?
Yes, and I am going to analyze the amount of total polyphenols and anthocyanins in each varieties. And after that, I'm going to analyze the specific, quantify the polyphenols and anthocyanins and another flavonoids in the each varieties.
How do you actually do that? What kind of machinery do you put it through?
Oh, in Olds College, we possess a really modern equipment in the lab. So I have HPLC, I have MS, and I can connect HPLC with MS. I also have CE, and I can connect CE with MS. So it's, you know, the best way to quantify and qualify my polyphenols.
You're going to be working on this for about 2 years. How do you see the research program progressing?
You think that during these 2 years, it's a lot of time to check it in each variety, because I have 17, so it takes me a few months to check the amount of polyphenols in it. And after this, we can focus on the food processing and see what we can do to make juice with much higher polyphenols content than they obtain now. And I think that 2 years, it's enough time for us to do this.
These berries are looking pretty ripe right now. How quickly do you have to work?
I think that I have only 2 weeks, you know, for preparing all my analysis and do as much as possible when they are fresh. And after these 2 weeks, I'm going to storage them in different conditions and see what happens after a few months or a few years with my polyphenols.
So there could be a difference then in their state, being different if it's fresh or frozen?
Oh yes, I'm sure that polyphenols are not the stable compound, really stable compound, so I'm sure that will be the difference. And maybe we can focus on different conditions and we can tell after this 1 year or 2 years what kind of condition in the storage will be the best to keep our polyphenols in the high level.
Well, I wish you well, and I'm looking forward to coming back in a little while and having another handful of berries and seeing how you're making out. Thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you. See you.
That was Dr. Anya Bukowska-Bartek. She's researching Saskatoon and blackcurrant berries as part of an Alberta Ingenuity Industrial Associateship project with the Olds College School of Innovation. I also spoke with her supervisor, Dr. Paul Kawajaychuk, and berry farmer Arden Dealadays. Thank you. with these hot summer days, we're in the middle of forest fire season. Forest fires can be very devastating for communities located in woodlands, but they're also part of the natural and very necessary cycle of forest rejuvenation. Dr. Ed Johnson is an ecologist at the University of Calgary and a researcher for the Sustainable Forest Management Network. His research over the last 3 decades has helped change our perception of fire.
Well, part of it has been the struggle through starting in the 1970s that realized that all kinds of natural disturbances, floods, wind storms, you know, insects even, and fire, were a normal part of the landscape. When I started off, everyone thought that most fires were man-caused and in North America, and that therefore they were unnatural in that sense. It took a long time till they realized that there was more than enough lightning to cause a lot. And then you can argue that indigenous people at one time were sort of natural parts of the landscape too. That's still sort of a controversial area as to what exactly they did, mostly because it's almost impossible to recover some of what they actually did on the landscape. But the point is that we saw this as natural parts. We also began to learn that they had a frequency. Not that like every 5 years the fires would occur, but there was a probability of fire, just as there's a probability that all of us will die at certain ages. And when you're younger, it's not as bad as when you get older. And natural disturbances have those sorts of frequency of occurrence.
How can you really go about predicting a forest fire when we can't even predict the weather from day to day?
Well, it's not only, I mean, there are certainly developments that allow you to predict better the conditions under which. A good example, I mean, I'm not going to be able to predict to you tomorrow afternoon we'll have a fire that could be such and such a size. But really, that's not what foresters and other people want to know. They really have more often general questions. For example, would it be nice here in June, for example, to know that that during, say, a fire season in July and August is going to be larger or smaller than average? And so how would you go about predicting that? And that would be primarily not a local condition, but a weather condition, which is a big-scale weather condition. And the question is, how well can we predict a long and persistent high-pressure system in August and in July when we're in June or May? And the answer is that we hope is that eventually we'll be able to make better predictions of that, because the high in July and August is going to be caused by certain kinds of anomalous surface water temperatures in the North Pacific. And it'll take a time for that effect to work itself in the flow of the air.
Well, what's the connection there?
Well, the answer is that remember that the atmosphere is a fluid, and a high-pressure system is a big standing wave. And if you've gone kayaking or canoeing in whitewater, you know, you'll see the big standing wave. You know that in front of it there's a rock, which is drawing the water down. And if you hit that, you'll hit the canoe. So now think of the northern hemisphere, and the big standing wave is the high over Alberta. So when we move upstream, in other words, west, there must be a low. A low water or low fluid, and that low fluid in the atmosphere is in the North Pacific. But the air in the North Pacific is coupled to the surface water temperatures. And so if you make an anomalous surface water temperature, you will change the way the weather will be above it, and that will affect eventually the downstream flow. And we know that lots of areas in North America that are subject to these high-pressure systems which are associated with large fire are associated with these sorts of patterns. So if we could work that out, then we would be able to make better predictions in the future, at least to warn people that this is the year to be more careful around your house and things of this sort. Now, in close, it may be you can refine some of your prediction techniques better, but those have been done fairly well. The next is what kind of effects do you want after the fire? And there you need to know something about how the fires behave and how that affects certain kinds of ecological processes. And so, like we talked about on the tree mortality, this is one of those areas where we need more careful predictions so we can anticipate the effects, or in some cases we may be able to modify the fire in certain ways in order to do that. Modifying big fires is sort of difficult. It's much more useful probably in the long run to see what the effects will be so that we know what effect it'll have on the forest.
Why is it that some trees survive fire and others don't?
Well, mostly surface fires is what we're really talking about. Not many survive crown fires. And there, if you just think logically about it, the first is how thick the bark is at the base. And we all know that some trees, Douglas fir, for example, have very thick bark. And so they are very pre-adapted in this sense to these fires. On the other hand, you have to be kind of careful because some trees have a lot more thicker bark than you think. Aspen, for example, has much thicker bark. Most people think that it has thin bark, but in fact it has relatively thick bark, so it survives a lot better than spruces do at times. So that's the first thing. The other is how the buds, because if you're going to kill the crown of the tree, it's going to be killing the buds. Then the question is how the buds are distributed in the crown itself. And the crown, if it's elevated, if it's high up and the buds are high up above the ground, you can see that a surface fire will have a hard time heating up those areas. So some trees which have big stems and little tufts at the top are much safer, as long as they have thick bark. Than do trees, say, for example, spruce, which have branches which go much further down, closer to the ground, and so more of the buds will be killed. So you need to know something about the distribution of those. So it really works into those kinds of variables that you need to look at.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Ed Johnson, a professor of ecology and holder of the G8 Legacy Research Chair in Wildlife Ecology at the University of Calgary. He's also a researcher with the Sustainable Forest Management Network. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Research Council, the Alberta Conservation Association, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Innovation and Science, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.